Okay, behind me, if you did not get a chance, sort of weird is if you look up there, there's nothing on the screen, so I sort of feel like I don't exist. if you didn't get a chance to take the quiz that tells you which of the disc types you are, there's a link for it. I'd prefer you don't do it while I'm teaching, but I ain't gonna stop you. So, it's pretty quick. Shouldn't take you too long at all. And we'll get going. Daryl, I saw you at the mic, so you mind saying a prayer for us?
Most gracious Heavenly Father, we humbly come for you, thanking you for the wonderful gifts that you've given us, our families, the family here that we worship you with, and the families we also have at home. And Heavenly Father, we thank you for our parents, mother and fathers, and what they've taught us. And pray that we remember the things that they taught us in you, that we have become better Christians. And Heavenly Father, as we study your word tonight, that we do it to your glory and not of our own, that we will apply these things to our heart and to our minds and be better Christians after this study. Heavenly Father, we also thank you for your Son, who we have the hope of everlasting life through. And this in Jesus' name I ask. Amen.
Thank you, sir. So this is going to come up later. If you want to do it, wouldn't take you more than 2 or 3 minutes while I'm going over. So the intros part, anybody want to scan it before I click through? It's one of the curses of teaching. As soon as you click, that's when the kid realizes, oh, I missed that part. Hold on, go back. You want to say, write faster. So there's that. Really loud. What was that? Oh, you getting it there? Yeah. So that'll come up later, like I said. So once you find your part out, or if you just want to save the mark for later, bookmark for later and look at it then, that is perfectly okay. I always take little notes in my pad, and I've got one that says, Kids Excited, and I'm trying to remember why I took that note. I remember when I wrote it, and I remember what happened, but I don't remember what they were excited about. So I don't remember, but it was interesting because I was sitting up here because I was doing something for service and somebody said something and I could hear Isabel and a few of the other girls behind them. They were like, like they actively gasped at something. And it was like, okay, that's cool. And I don't remember what was said. So sorry, partial memory. But I'm pretty sure it had to do with the being excited, the being fueled, the let's go kind of stuff that we've been talking about in this, which is going to take me to click. There we go. We're going to talk about leveraging your strengths. Okay, that's one of those buzzwords you hear in business. How are you leveraging your assets and all that good stuff? How are you leveraging your strengths? Back to science. You got something, you try to pick it up, right? It's really heavy, but if you put a lever under it, right? A lever is simply a plank and a piece like a triangle, and you push on this side, and what happens? Engineer folk, Dave, what happens when you lose a lever? It makes it easier, right? You ever use a crowbar? Same thing. So we're going to talk about leveraging your strengths. So using your strengths as a tool to get better at something or to be better at whatever, and our whatever is the title of the class, Lifelong Zeal, right? So how can you use your strengths to get better at being zealous, at spreading that zeal, because I hope by lesson 16, we have realized that zeal has a quality that starts with C and rhymes with shmunshmagus. Zeal is what? Starts with C. Contagious, thank you. That wasn't a good rhyme, but so there we go. It is contagious. When you are around people who are zealous, you will be more zealous. I hope you have figured that out now. I'm really better at rhyming than that, so don't judge me by that one rhyme. Okay, so we've been at prepare, we've been at ignite, we've been to fuel, we've been to protect, and now we're on use. So how can we go out and use our zeal now that we've done all these other things, right? And we've been using that campfire analogy where we prepared it, we ignited it, we fueled that fire, we're up to it, we're protecting it so it doesn't get blown out in the wind, and now we got to do something with it, right? Because it's pretty useless to us if it just sort of sits there on a shelf. And so we are talking about using it, using your zeal in a way that is productive and really reaches out to help everybody else, okay? Because if anything else, your zealousness can fuel other people's zealousness. Does that make sense? So even at the lowest level, if you can't get out and do much else, if other people see your zealousness, they will see you doing things and it will fuel theirs. Okay? Questions on that? We're going to be at spread pretty quick too. These are pretty short sections. Okay. Goals. We got two goals tonight. Our first goal is to know that all Christians have skills. Okay? And we can say that and we can be about that and we can know that, but do we deep down in our hearts know that all Christians have skills? Do we? It is hard. It is really easy, actually. Let's start that phrase over. It is very easy to look at somebody else and say, that is Dave's skill, right? That is Marissa's skill. That is Jean's skill. That is John's skill. It's really easy to do that, but it's really hard to look at yourself and say, this is my skill. Why? Why is it so hard for us to look at ourselves and say that I have a skill? Somebody? I saw Liz whispering something. Why is it hard to admit we have a skill? There you go. So he's got a skill, right? So I think that's number one, and that's an excellent segue in. He said that if he sees somebody, he's going to talk to him. Okay? If y'all know me long enough, I would talk to the brick wall if nobody else is around. Okay? That's a skill. And the point is that we may not even recognize our own skills. Does that make sense? But if we do recognize our skills, why is it so hard for someone to say, I am good at X? Humility. Yeah, you don't want to sound like what? Somebody, I thought I heard somebody say it. You don't want to sound like you're bragging. You don't want to sound arrogant. Okay? And it's really hard to say things like that and not seem like you feel arrogant to yourself, right? That's why I think if we think back to that, get a partner, someone who can help you, they'll help you see your skills better because you'll look at yourself and be like, first of all, I don't see that as a skill. And second of all, I don't want to say that that's a skill of mine because I don't want to sound like I'm arrogant, okay? And it's really hard to do that sometimes, okay? So we're going to talk about knowing that you have skills and how it's okay to admit you have skills. It's when you take it over the top that really messes with it. And then also our goal is we're going to consider my skills. I should have put our skills. But we're going to consider our skills. So when you walk out of here, I want you to know deep down in your heart that you have a skill, right? You may not know what it is. You might have a better idea. But I want you to know that you have a skill somewhere. You might have multiple skills. And then I want you to be able to think about what is going to be that skill and how are you going to use that skill to build lifelong zeal? Okay? So that'll come up as a homework assignment later, I hope, if I can remember what I'm thinking. Questions before we go on about the goals? Because I'm going to tell you, the first goal is actually really easy to talk about. Let's do that real quick. Every Christian has skills. Does we all understand that? Can we nod? Yeah. Does anybody doubt? Does anybody not think they have skills? If you don't, ooh, I saw somebody raise a hand. I'm not going to point them out, but we'll get there. Everybody has a skill. Everybody has a skill. Let's go to 1 Peter 4:10. Let's look at that real quick. It's going to be on the screen if you don't want to flip through. 1 Peter 4:10, as each one has received a special gift, employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the multifaceted grace of God. Okay? So who's Peter talking to in this? In 1 Peter, who's Peter talking about? Or talking to? James, who's he talking to? Christians, right? The letter. This letter is there for us to read, right? Now, there is a target audience, but I can't read that and not think. Everybody's got a special gift, right? We talk about the talents, right? Everybody has a talent. And are you talking about the silver talent or are you talking about the talent? But you're talking about both at the same time, right? So, one verse we could probably pull when I started looking at this, 15, 20, 30 verses in, I thought, you know what, just one's enough, okay? Everybody has a skill. You just may not know it yet, okay? And that's what this lesson is about, is helping you find those skills and helping you find what you're good at, which I really like this lesson because every lesson that I've taught to up till now has sort of been a kick in the teeth, and here's all the, it's bad, bad, bad. Here's the stuff that we're doing wrong. Here's the lies we're going to fall for. This is, here's what you're awesome at. go do it. Okay? And I hope if you got to hear Philip teach, after I heard him teach, this book made so much more sense to me. Because now I can put it in his just energy into what I'm thinking. And it's the book, I was like, okay, the book totally makes a little more sense to me because of the way he presents and the way he is and the way he sort of goes about his discussions. And so this is a lesson that should be, you should walk out here thinking, great, I'm going to do this, this, and this, hopefully. Okay? We good? Okay. Okay. So one of the things we got to understand is there are four things that are required, okay? So we're talking about strengths and things that we should do. There are four required things that all Christians are required to do, or they are required of us. We're going to go through those real quick. They are your worship. Every Christian is required to worship, okay? We'll talk about that in a second. Every Christian is required to evangelize in some way or another. There are different stages of this we'll talk about. I don't want anybody to think. I'm telling you, everybody has to be an evangelist. But everybody has to be in evangelism in part of what they do as a Christian. Okay? Everybody is required, your holiness is required of you. Okay? We'll talk about that a little bit. It's pretty self-explanatory. And then your roles. There are certain roles in your life that you are required to fulfill just because of how you were born and the type of family you have. Okay? And we're going to talk about that, which has some interesting implications as we get into it. Okay, so first one is, your worship is required of you. So John 4, 23 and 24, let's look there real quick. I think part of it's on the screen, but not all of it. Okay, so John 23 and 24, sorry guys. So this is Jesus speaking, if you got the red letter Bible or red letter app, Jesus speaking here. So this is his words. But a time is coming, and even now has arrived, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For such people, the Father seeks to be his worshipers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. Okay, so even if we go, it's not up there. Good thing I read it. Even if we go just to the last part of that, God is spirit, and those who worship him, God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. Okay, do we have any disagreement that every Christian is required to worship? We good? Everybody agree on that one? Disagree? It's okay. Okay, we should all agree, actually. It's actually not okay to disagree on this one, because it's a fundamental tenet of what we believe. Okay, so your evangelism. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 21, 1:21. So in 1 Corinthians 1, he's going to talk a little bit about evangelism real quick. Let me get there so I can read the whole thing from in front of me. Okay, so 21 in 1 Corinthians 1. For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God. God was pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believed. Am I in the right place? I believe I am. I'm going to read from up there. God was pleased to preach through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believed. So let's look at the last part of that. Sorry, that's a tongue twister sort of a little bit. God was pleased through the foolishness of let me take a deep breath here, guys. Sorry about that. God was pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. I don't know why that's so hard for me to read. Sorry about that. Apparently my skill tonight is not reading out loud. I will leverage that in different ways. So, are we required to evangelize? Does this one verse tell us that this is a requirement of us? So everybody has to preach. Yes? No? Does everybody have to preach? It probably is wrong. Let me even look. 1 Corinthians 1:21. Not sure why I wrote that down. Sorry, guys. So, okay, let's just forget that's on there. I'm sure it's a great verse, but not just for this one. 1:20. So, are we required to evangelize? James, give me a verse that tells us we should evangelize. 1 Peter 3:15 says, if you didn't hear that, he quoted 1 Peter 3:15. So we should be ready to give an answer, correct? We should be ready to step up and do that. But how else do we evangelize? How else do we present the hope that we have? By the way you live, right? We have the song, we are the only gospel that something I've ever heard. I can't think of the words now because, of course, my brain's shot. But we have that song, right? We are the sinner's gospel. I can't remember the whole words to it. But the whole gist of the song is, we may be the only sermon some people get. And the way we live, the way we interact, the way we treat people, all people, is a sermon. It is evangelism. Okay? Just getting up here and speaking every Sunday is not the only form of evangelism we have. Okay? It is how you live. And I guarantee you, as many sermons as Mike has preached, everybody in this room has preached just as many. I was going to say, or more, but he does the extra ones on Sunday mornings. But at least the same amount, besides if you take away the ones he gets up here and does. Correct? Because it's how you live. And the worst sermon people are going to hear aren't going to come from a pulpit. It's going to come from the way we react to everyday situations. When we react like fools and get all crazy about silly things, and people think, you want me to study the Bible with you? And you just freaked out because that person didn't give you the right change at Dairy Queen? Or they dropped your slushie? Yeah. So our evangelism is required of us. Do we all agree? Everyone is required to evangelize. Not evangelist, but evangelize. Excellent. I'm glad you all agree, because it is not my night. So, your holiness is required. We talked about this a little bit, right? You have to be holy in the way that you do things. Remember we talked about building your zeal, and that if you build your zeal, but you build it in ways that are evil, or not even just evil, but just sort of cutting corners and bad, we will ultimately hurt ourselves. So let's look at the holiness. So James 1:27. I'm pretty sure this is right because I wrote this one down before I came. So we're looking at James 1:27. Knowing my luck, James 1:27 doesn't exist tonight. Nope, it's there. So pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained from the world. So go visit old people, go help orphans, and just that's enough, right? Be unstained by the world. Because I think the idea of being unstained is a little different than setting apart. Because it's the old saying of, you know, we're supposed to be in the world, but not of the world, correct? We cannot build a hedge around ourselves and hope to influence everybody on that side of the hedge without going on to that side of the hedge, right? But the key is there. What's that last part in James 1:27 say? Stay unstained by the world. So you're going to see things and you're going to have to deal with things that are going to be hard and difficult. And you're going to have to deal with sin in your life. And you're going to have to deal with sin in the lives of the people we go reach for. Because that's the nature of the work. We reach out to those who are sinful. Because those that aren't sinful, while they do need it, right? Go back to the physician. Why did the great physician come? For the hurt. For the sick. Not necessarily for those that are already good enough. Which, spoiler alert, nobody is good enough. Okay? So there we go. One more on this one. Ephesians 5:11. Let's look there real quick. Okay, 5:11. Do not participate in the useless deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. Okay? So if we had to put that in our modern vernacular, don't do bad stuff. When you see bad stuff, you need to point it out. Okay? Let's just leave off the point it out part, because that can get a little furry, and there's a whole bunch of other lessons about that, right? But in Ephesians 5:11, the first part of that verse says, don't take part in that stuff. Don't do it. So can we agree that our holiness is required? It is one of those check boxes that every Christian has to check. Yeah, because once again, our evangelism is... So, okay, let me step back for a second. There's a thing that I dealt with when I did warranty complaints for my family's business. And my dad came to me. He was the CEO of the factory, and I had to listen to his nuggets of wisdom from time to time. And he said, okay, here's the deal. If somebody has a good experience with this business, they will tell two people on average, right? Two people. If somebody has a bad experience with this business, how many people are they going to tell? Seven people, okay? So two for good, seven for bad. So we try to mitigate the bad because it takes... Let's do a little math. How many good times does it take to override the one bad time? What's that? Four, right? Four full ones, or just three and a half. Three and an average, right? Because they'll tell one person. So it takes that to override that. Same deal. If you act like a complete yahoo out there on a Friday or Saturday night, and people see you and they say, oh, I know him. He attends here. He calls himself a Christian. You might as well believe that that's gonna get to seven other people, not just two, right? And so we got to think about that. So our holiness is definitely required, and this one is one that can crush the worship part and the evangelism part very quickly, okay? Okay, your roles. So we are required to go to Lambert's and get those pieces of bread thrown at us, right? Because our roles are required. Sorry. Bad puns, bad jokes. So, your personal roles determine some of your required actions. So, what is a role? Let me just pick on somebody. Mike, what's a role you have? Any role. Raise your children. Head of the household, right? You are a husband. You are a father. It is your job to be a head of the household. If you are a husband, you have a role. Your role is the head of the household, correct? Let me see, who else can I pick on? Amanda, looked away real quick, so I'm picking her. What's a role you have, Amanda? Mother, same deal, right? She has a role, she has certain things she's required to do as a mother, right? Okay. It's getting slim on the role picking. I don't want to, put anybody on the... John looks like he's ready. What's a role you have?
Brother.
Okay, do you have actions required as a brother? Now, are we talking like sibling brother or Christian brother or... Yeah, okay. Yes, both, right? Yeah, so another one I thought of is employee. If I am going to agree to give my labor to the school district, I have agreed to that contract. Part of my word and my honesty is that I am going to provide that role at an acceptable or better level. Okay, and I believe that as Christians we are called to do that, to honor our word and our contracts we make. So that's a role, right? So we all have roles, and those roles shape what we are required to do. Okay? So as I was thinking about this, I was going to say, let's just throw out some random roles. So does this mean that only the wife can cook dinner? Is that a role? I know, I said I wasn't going to step into this mound of confusingness. I don't believe so. I personally like to cook, so I cook dinner. I like to. I enjoy it. It lets Aaron relax. Lets me cook. I like to do that, and it sort of gets my ADHD brain a step-by-step pattern, and it lets me go cook dinner, right? So, this is another thing. Guys, or new dads, don't ever say that you're going to babysit. Okay, they're your kids. You don't babysit your own kids. You take care of them. And it's real quick, just a quick lesson. Don't say you babysit, because we have roles as parents, right? We both have to take part in raising the children. Good stuff there. Questions, comments, or concerns here? There's our four required things. Everybody's got these four things, right? We agree. See some nods, some head shakes. If you disagree, let's talk later, because I'm running out of time in my lesson. So, if you're looking at your handout, that was that first box, your four things that you have. Now you're over here on the left-hand side, one box down. What actions bring the greatest return? Okay? What did Jesus spend his time doing when he was on earth? Teaching, right? Teaching who? I need to see who said that. Everyone, okay. So that's, he taught everybody, every single person that he came in contact with? I would say yes. But he also focused on a few people. Who was his focus, though? His not just his focus, but who did he, like, really teach to? The apostles. Say that again. Yeah, the last week of his life is like a boot camp for the apostles, right? Now, could Jesus have spent that time preaching to a whole mess of people? Could have. But why didn't he? So, if you didn't hear him online, this is for online people, he had to prepare them to take over, right? Because he knew he was about to be out, and he had to get these guys ready to take care of what needed to take care of. Because Jesus shows us that there are certain actions that work better than others, right? So, this is a lot of notes here, so be ready for this one. So, watch. What actions bring the greatest return? Do that. Okay? If you know that doing action X is going to provide you with a 10% rate of return versus action Z that's going to provide you with a 50% rate of return, why do X? Right? Unless maybe that 20% don't overlap with that 50%, right? So sometimes we got to think about that. But you do the things that work the best. So this is another thing I was not going to bring up, but I'll bring it up. Why don't we have two-week meetings anymore? Say it again. Can't get people to come to a one-week meeting. Okay? So we know a two-week meeting doesn't work as well as a one-week, and we're actually moving down to smaller size meetings because it's more effective. It has a better return, right? So why wouldn't you do the things that have a better return, right? Now, I'm not saying we throw away every single little thing we've ever done that has a that isn't having a high rate of return on our work, our effort versus our people coming in or people we're teaching and evangelizing. But I'm saying if you find something that has a better return, do it. Here's the next part of this. Get better at that, right? Because if you're at 50% rate of return, if you go out and you talk to 100 people and 5 of them show up, that's pretty good. If you can study with 5 people, that's really good. But you know what? You go up by one person, it's better, right? And if you get better at talking to people and involving people and engaging people in thoughts about their eternal soul, do that, right? So one of my skills is I am pretty good at talking to people and they feel relatively comfortable talking to me. It's part of being a teacher where I have to get these kids to trust me pretty quickly. That is something I can still get better at because there are ways that I could change my presentation, my mannerisms to do that. Okay? So, find the action with the greatest return and do that. And then get better at it. Oh, over here. There.
I hope I'm not stepping on anything you're going to say.
Probably.
But
oh, go ahead.
The question is, why? You know, why do we have to worry about doing the things to do the greater return? Why do we need to be more efficient with our time? And the answer is in Ephesians 5. Because Paul writes, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil.
Yeah.
No one likes to think that our time is limited, but it's limited. You know, I don't have 60 years left anymore.
Yeah.
I have 20 years left anymore. But we do have a limited amount of time, and so we need to be efficient and think about how we can have the greatest impact. And I think this is a great thing to for us to think about. And that helps us to get away from, well, we've always done it that way. Well, if that's not as efficient anymore, then we're going to do it differently and better.
Yeah, and that's scary. That's scary to us. And this is just talking as a specific Church of Christ. It is scary to us because we don't like change. Remember I talked about change. And it's scary. But if there is a tradition that is hindering us, that does not have a scriptural reason to exist, and we can adjust it and be a little better, think we're called to do that. Now, I'm not saying to change it just because we're changing it. I think that's a terrible idea. People who change things just to change things, there's zero reason to do that. But if we have a specific purpose to change something, if we tweak this, and I'm not even going to suggest anything because I don't want anybody to throw anything at me. If we tweak this and it's still scripturally acceptable and we don't do it because we're just uncomfortable with it, we are putting our comfort before the gospel. And that is not right. Right? So, any questions about that one? You notice I haven't talked about any of these things yet that we're doing? Because I'm not gonna. It's gonna be your job to figure it out, because we're gonna talk about that here in a second. Okay, what actions are the most rewarding? Now, okay, so right here, what have the greatest return? So how many people are we affecting is this one? This is personal here. What is it that you are doing that makes you feel effective? Because there is research that says when you feel effective, when you have efficacy at something, when you have efficacy, you get better at it, okay? There's in my field, in teaching, teachers who feel like they are good at teaching are the best teachers, okay? Teachers who do not feel like they're good at teaching are bad, are generally not as good or growth mindset oriented I hate to say bad, they're just not as up there, right? So a lot of teacher training lately is shifting to letting teachers feel effective, okay? And so the same way, if you do something and it's effective, you're going to feel better about it. You're going to replicate that. You're going to want to, right? You're going to get that hit of dopamine. Man, that was great. I like that. And you're going to want to do what? Do it again, and then do it again, and then do it again. And guess what? You'll get better at those things as you do them. But also, as you are excited about it, you are going to drag other people with you. And it may not even be on purpose. And you may not even know that you're dragging people along. Okay? Everybody with me on that one? So let's see what I wrote up here, because I'm struggling to remember. So, we all have required things we get to do, right? We had those four things: worship, holiness, evangelism, and our roles, right? We get to do those things. Notice I didn't say we have to do those things. That's that growth mindset. If you say you have to do something, it makes it just, ugh, oh, we'll do that. But you get to, right? So we have the required things that we get to do. But when you get to choose, choose wisely. Do not choose something that you to do that you are going to walk into it and be like, man, this is awful. But I'm going to do it. And I'm going to trudge through it. And I'm going to roll my eyes the entire time. But it's done. I checked off that box. Don't do it. If it is not a required thing for you, don't. Find something to do that is more rewarding for you. Because all you'll do is create a heart of ugh in you because you're doing something you don't necessarily find rewarding, but then you're also going to create a heart of ugh in everybody around you as it's happening, right? And what did we say about the longest sermon we're preaching? That's how you live. And sometimes we preach sermons to each other in the way that we address each other and the way we go through actions together, right? Everybody with me on this? I know it feels really weird to be talking about doing things for church and for church members and for zeal that you're just blech about. But there's something, you would be a liar if you say there are some things that you're just like, blech, do I really have to do that? Is anybody brave enough to admit there's just something that they just don't like doing? I'll tell you a story about my grandfather real quick. My grandfather was the nicest human being on the planet. He was an air traffic controller during Korea because he had this nice, calming voice, and we always said that he should host the radio, and he would talk just like this. And the only time I heard him yell was when I tripped walking towards him with scissors, and he thought I was going to stab him. So that's granted. He should yell. But he told me once he did not like visiting old people. Now, he told me this when he was 76 years old. And he said, he was an elder. He's like, I'll do it. But at the end of the day, it's just so, he's like, you just see all these old people, right? You just sort of drag you down. I was like, Grandpa, you're pretty old yourself. And he was like, I know, but I'd rather be doing this and this and this. So, I mean, that was pretty interesting for him he's also the guy, he'd never complained a day in his life. That's the closest I ever heard him say that, is that he didn't like visiting old people as much. But he still did it, and he was happy about it. But still, I mean, we all have stuff we just don't like to do. It's okay to admit that sometimes. It's part of being human. It also keeps you from burning out. So, the fourth box. Wait, any comments or concerns? Anybody share something they just don't like doing? Since I aired my grandfather, he's been dead for about 15 years, his story. He's rolling his eyes right now, probably, if he heard me. So, the last point, and this is where that the survey comes in. What actions are related directly to your personality? Okay? And I'm going to start with a big point. It's personal. The actions that you are directly, that you are strong at, are related to your personality, and it is personal. So, I need to say this very clearly. If someone says they are not good at something and they do not want to get better at it because it is not something that they feel that they can be effective at, we should not shame them for it. We should admire them for the courage to admit that they know something about themselves that we may not, and they are admitting when they know that they could do better stuff. Does that make sense? Anybody read the book Good to Great? What's the whole premise of good to great is stop focusing on the good stuff so you can do the great stuff, okay? But this is personal. And so your personality and skills associated with it are yours. And just because I can talk to a wall and I have a friend that can talk to a wall, that does not mean that person may be suited to be a teacher. That person may be suited really well to be a greeter, but they may not have the personality, quirks, and traits that make them look at something and think, how can I mold this into something that 90 people will sort of get all at different levels, right? So how many of you all did the DISC test? It's okay. Yeah, nice. That's more than did my homework today at school. The four personality types, and I tried to get a picture of this. I could not get it fine or worked up enough. If you look at this here target, it looks like a crosshairs, right? If you take the DISC assessment, it will tell you what kind of personality you have. And it's either a dominant personality, an influencing personality, a compliance personality, or a steadiness personality. Okay, and each one of those has strengths and weaknesses. And then also, what's interesting is Aaron and I did this, and after I took the quiz, I read through what my weaknesses are, and I was like, oh yeah, yeah. And you may not even have to take the quiz. If you just look at the weaknesses and the strengths and you associate with what you think you are, you could probably get yourself pretty close. So that is just one way to figure out what your personality is. And he actually gets into in here where he talks about who are two characters that associate with each of the four. Okay? And so I debated on talking about it and going over each one, and I don't want to do that because I want you to figure it out. Okay? I want you to take the step to figure out what personality you have and then find Bible characters with similar traits. He did two of them for you. I'm sure you can find more. But also find other Christians with that trait. Okay? So here's a good example of finding another Christian who has the similar traits to you. Okay? Travis and I are pretty close in personality and the way we approach problems. So I see in Travis a lot of my weaknesses and my strengths. So when I want to make sure I don't sound like a complete raving lunatic, I run it by Travis because I know he's going to sort of see my weaknesses in the same way, right? So that's just find a partner. He's the guy that I go to if I want to make sure I don't sound crazy, because if I hear him saying it, I'm going to be able to pick it up pretty quick because I see our personality sort of matching. So there are enough people in this congregation, you can find somebody who matches you, okay? So who did anybody get theirs and actually don't mind sharing what personality trait they got? Anybody want to guess what mine was? You can, it's not going to hurt my feelings. Nobody? Come on. John, what do you think I got? I'm an I, yeah. I'm an I. I'm an influencer, but I definitely, like if you take the quiz, it'll sort of tell you where in that quadrant you fall. I'm like right here between the D and the I. I'm on the influence because I am enthusiastic. I'm talkative. I like to think I'm compassionate sometimes. I'm sometimes optimistic, but I am really undisciplined. I am restless. I can be self-centered, and I can be fearful too. So I can totally see that, right? So if you're an I as well, you come over here to the I, and you look at Peter and Priscilla, right? And those are some of the qualities that you're going to see. But he also, he goes even far enough to tell you, hey, if you know that you're this, these are the things that you should try working on because you'll be good at it. Okay? Stephen, you were about to...
Yeah.
You're a C? Yeah. Totally see that. What's actually funny is when Aaron and I took this, I am right here and she's right here. So we're exact opposites. And so it's sort of interesting. I would wager to say, if I look at it about some of the married couples I know a little better than others, I would say you guys are probably opposites too, or at least not in the same quadrant. Because if you actually dig into the DISC thing, that actually tells you that people in the same quadrant as you make good friends, but not really, really close friends because you'll get on each other's nerves. So questions about that? So we got 4 minutes left, and I'm not going to give you those free. So what, as a reflection, what are you good at? You'll make me call people out? I got some people I think are good at things. What are you good at, and what could you be better at? And can those things be the same thing? Because just like I said, I bring my crazy ideas to Travis so he can tell me how crazy they are. I'll tell you, if you want somebody to be introspective for you and look at something you have either worked on or an idea you have and pick it apart to the minute level, that man right there is going to do it for you, Stephen. Okay? He totally will. He will look at it and he will sometimes lovingly and sometimes not as lovingly say, what are you talking about? What is this? But sometimes you need to hear that, right? So, what are you good at? Somebody, come on. Tell me what you're good at. It can't be Stephen because I already gave him the answer. This is part of getting to know each other. So here's your homework. Let me say what your homework is before Travis starts to talk. Your homework is to figure out what you're good at. And just like I told you a couple weeks ago to compliment somebody else, if there is somebody in this congregation who you think is good at something, I want you to tell them that. Be like, hey, I think when it comes down to lifelong zeal, your skill is this. Okay? And just leave it at that. Or you can even say, here's why. Because you blah, 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 blah. Okay? But I want you to do that. One person. Not two this time. See, I'm cutting the assignments in half, right? Travis, what you got?
All right. I'm pretty good at encouraging. And I practice that. So I'm okay with saying that. It's not natural. But what could I be better at? I could be a lot better at being patient and reasonable with my expectations of people.
Yeah. This is the part of the meeting where we say, hi, Travis. So, thank you. I appreciate that. And I've talked about culture shift, and we switch from being a bunch of people who meet on Sunday mornings and Sunday nights and Wednesday nights to a church. And we are willing to say that to each other and then help each other leverage those strengths. Does that make sense? Everybody has skills. The one person I saw didn't have a skill. I'm not going to say who it was, but I will say to that person who raised their hand, see, got the pronoun right. I'm going to give it away by saying he or she, their hand, you are one of the most encouraging people every time I stop teaching a class. You always have something nice to say to me or to say to people around, and it's not just to me, but it's to other people. So yes, you have a skill. You just don't know it, and you don't want to admit it about yourself, but you do. Everybody in this room has a skill. Okay? Who else? Anybody else? 45 seconds. There are skills that you have, and if you don't know, I'll tell you, there are probably five people in this auditorium. If you just say, hey, what's my skill? They'll lay it out to you. I will do that for you. Stephen would do that for you. James would do that for you. Travis would do that for you. Joey would probably do that for you. If I'm not calling your name, it's not, no slight against you. I'm just going by personalities, people who will talk to anybody. So Keith would do that for you. Terry would definitely do that for you. You just got to stand through a couple jokes first. So if you don't know what your skill is, seriously, grab one of the people I just named and say, what's my skill? What can I do? What can I be better at? And I'll tell you right now, if you ask any of the people that I talk to you, they'll say, hey, you can be a part of this. Let's go do this. Let's go. So there we go. Thanks, guys. 17 on Sunday morning, and hopefully my brain will be screwed in correctly for that one. Thanks, guys.